From the Portland Sports Arena, this is Portland Wrestling.
Thank you for downloading the Portland WrestleCast. I'm Jim Valley. If this is your first episode, I grew up watching Don Owens' Portland territory, and for over 60 years, his family ran the NWA territory in the Northwest out of Portland, Oregon. They went as far south as Medford with the border of California, all the way up into Washington, even sometimes into Idaho. But I grew up on this, and I have an affinity for it, but as I've discovered, a lot of people outside of the Northwest don't know a lot about the territory. So this podcast is sort of my labor of love to teach people about the wrestling that I grew up on, and as they used to say on NBC, if you haven't seen it, it's new for you. So I would encourage you to go back in the archives and listen to interviews with wrestlers like Steve Regal, who was here in the 80s, also Tom Pritchard, talking about things that he learned in Portland. We talked to the ex-wife of Playboy Buddy Rose, historian Mike Rogers, and many, many more as we cover the history of Portland wrestling. So my guest today wrestled under the name, and still does, of John Rambo. And it's because he looked like, and he talks about it, looked like the Sylvester Stallone character from the movies. And not only was he here in 1990 through the end of Don Owens' run and Don Owens' television, he had the last match ever on Don Owens' Portland Wrestling television as he took on one half of the Bruise Brothers. I believe it was Ron Harris. I could never get those guys straight. But he talks about, John Rambo talks about all of the people who were here, including Bart Sawyer, the Bruise Brothers, Scott Norton, Scotty the Body, better known as Raven, Playboy Buddy Rose, Billy Jack Haynes, and he tells some tremendous stories, particularly one about Billy Jack and some trouble that was stirred up, and even Raven getting punched and some other things. So there's some good stories, but there's also a story that was brought up. It was reminded to me by a caller, Ryan, on Wrestling Observer Live, which I now do on Saturdays, which you can hear on this website and also on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. It's on 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, again, all across the United States, and you can stream it all over the world on sportsbyline.com, and also you can hear commercial-free for subscribers of WrestlingObserver.com. This is a free show, so if you're not signed up, be sure to subscribe. There's so much content on the Observer when it comes to audio, and of course Dave Meltzer and the Wrestling Observer newsletter is unparalleled when it comes to journalism in this industry. But probably the most interesting story that I was reminded of when it comes to John Rambo happened after the Don Owen promotion closed, and Sandy Barr, former professional wrestler, longtime referee and promoter for Don Owen, and of course, the father of Art Barr and Jesse Barr, took over promoting in the Northwest. And long after, or right after Don Owen stepped out in the first half of 1992, Sandy Barr took over and called his promotion Championship Wrestling USA, which made a lot of sense for the time. All the territories were pretty much gone except for Memphis, and it was now a national scene, a worldwide scene, thanks to the expansion of the WWF and WCW. Even in Texas, they tried to go national with the Global Wrestling Federation. Memphis was no longer Memphis. It was now the United States Wrestling Association, the USWA. So Sandy Barr was just following that trend, even though it was essentially a local promotion out of the Portland area. It did run some other towns, but it was essentially the same area, just with new branding. Championship Wrestling USA. You had to make things sound bigger and better and get some marketing behind your wrestling. Was it successful? We'll find out from John Rambo as he talks about the state of the territory in the last days of Don Owen and going into Sandy Barr. But as you know, Don Owen lost his television on KPTV, and we talk about that in one of the issues, one of the episodes in the archive, we talked to announcer Don Koss, and he gives his take and some things that I had never heard before as to why and how Portland Wrestling went off the air in December of 1991. Don tried to go on, but alas, one night at the sports arena, he announced he was done. And he was. And he passed the gauntlet to Sandy Barr and his family as they took over the wrestling promotion. Well, a lot of guys stuck around the territory. And John Rambo was one of those guys who continued to wrestle. We can't talk about all that happened without talking about, well, not just Championship Wrestling USA, but we have to talk about the Oregon Boxing and Wrestling Commission. As you probably remember, for the longest time, the WWF, the WWE, didn't run in Oregon. And that had a lot to do with the testing that Oregon demanded, very strenuous testing. And once a lot of that was repealed, WWE ran its first show in years in Portland in 2003. And it was pretty much a sold-out show at the Rose Garden, which is now known as the Moda Center, the arena where the Trailblazers of the NBA play basketball. Main evented by Kevin Nash and Triple H for the World Heavyweight Championship. Also on that show, Chris Jericho, and many others. And while many people expected that show to be something special, it really was just a WWE house show with a ton of people in the audience. But the Oregon Boxing Wrestling Commission in the late 80s and 90s was headed up by a very controversial gentleman named Bruce Anderson. Now, I am not here to put anybody on trial. This may be all new stories to you, and you may be outraged or upset, but for people in Portland and the Northwest, this is water that has long since passed under the bridge. So, I don't want to stir up a lot of old things with a lot of people that is, again, long since passed, that is ancient history to a lot of people. But I have to talk about it to set the stage for what happened to John Rambo and why. So a lot of this is from memory, and this may not be 100% truth, but what you need to understand is that this individual, Bruce Anderson, started very strictly enforcing rules on the commission. For example, for years, you'll look at old Portland wrestling television, you'll see there's no barriers up, there's no mats around the ring. Well, suddenly, there were mats around the ring, and there had to be a barrier where there was never, ever an issue. There was also very strict regulations on outside interference and foreign objects that could be used and the use of chairs. One of the most popular angles of the late 1980s, early 90s was the Grappler and the Breakfast Club, where you couldn't use chairs, you couldn't use certain foreign objects. So one of the guys in his faction, Nord the Barbarian, John Nord, came up with the idea to hit wrestlers with a gallon of milk. And if you read the Grappler's book, that milk hurt more than any chair you could imagine. I mean, can you imagine being just, you slam down a gallon of milk on a body that's prone on the floor, and that's going to explode and snap and bruise, and it hurt. You can work a chair. You can't work a gallon of milk to explode on a body. So much like the WWE is trying to get away from the image of blading, and that's why they've had Brock Lesnar and other people open up wrestlers the hard way, which is actually more dangerous. You have the same idea here in Portland, where some things sound good on paper, but the execution is terrible. You had a lot of pushback from wrestlers and the promotions from these new, stricter rules in Portland. So Sandy Barr, in order to get around the commission, tried a lot of workarounds. For example, Sandy Barr claimed that he wasn't charging admission to see the wrestling. He was now just charging people for parking. And because he wasn't charging for the wrestling, he was no longer under the auspices of the commission. And the commission also couldn't get its cut, because the commission got something like 6% of every gate, boxing and wrestling in Oregon. And again, that was one of the reasons why the rules were laxed for the WWE in 2003, was for money reasons, to make money off the gates that WWE was drawing at the time. And it still does to this day, although Bruce Anderson is long since gone, and I believe the commission now is under the auspices of the Oregon State Police. So there have been changes over time to the commission in Oregon. So getting back to Sandy Barr, he tried a workaround where he wasn't charging an admission, he was charging for parking, which of course is completely different. That did not fly. So there were a lot of suspensions and fines and just a lot of drama for a number of years between various wrestlers and Sandy Barr and this gentleman, Bruce Anderson. Sandy Barr then eventually stopped running in Portland and began running across the river, across the border of Oregon in Vancouver, Washington, because obviously that's a different state. That's not the Oregon Boxing Wrestling Commission. You're under a different set of rules and a different set of people. Now, there's a term in wrestling, stooge. That means that you are not one of the boys, that you are not keeping secrets that one of your colleagues, one of the boys, one of your fellow wrestlers would tell you in confidence, that you are stooging off to the office, the promotion, or you are stooging off to the Oregon Boxing Wrestling Commission. As you can imagine, there were a lot of accusations of stooging at the time. And I don't want to get into names, and I don't want to point fingers. I'm just giving you background. Because, like I said, for people in the Northwest, this is long since over. This is ancient history. But for new people, you need to know this as we set up the story with John Rambo. And believe me, it's a story. So there was, and there is, a gentleman who thought that Bruce Anderson was doing the right thing by the business. And he was probably the only one, but he was. So a lot of people labeled him a stooge. In their opinion, he was a stooge. But this gentleman believed that he was doing right by wrestling and was trying to do some things to help wrestling and improve wrestling. A difference of opinion. Well, Sandy Barr obviously was on the other side of the Oregon Boxing Wrestling Commission. You know, he'd been around forever, and everything was working before, and now you have this individual, and he's sticking his nose in where things were working fine before, and it's not like the business was booming. You know, he wasn't making money like he saw Don make money for decades, and he made money for decades. And so, you know, the business is down, and on top of that, you have these unnecessary, in Sandy Barr's opinion, rules and regulations in place that are costing him money even in a downtime. So you have these two existing forces. So it got out in the dressing room that there was a stooge. And Sandy Barr believed that our guest today, John Rambo, was the stooge. And so John Rambo had a match with Sandy Barr's son, Art Barr, in 1994. So Art Barr is in Mexico as the American Love Machine at this time. He's not even in the territory. And what John Rambo thought was going to be just a regular match that he didn't see coming with Art Barr, who he knew very well. He knew Sandy very well. He knew Jesse Bars, he'll tell you, very well. And out of nowhere, Art Barr smashes, in real life, smashes John Rambo in the face and, you'll hear, completely rearranges John Rambo's face as revenge for allegedly being the stooge. And John Rambo will tell this story, and he will tell it, because he can tell it much better than I can. But this is just sort of a little bit of background as far as what a tumultuous time it was in real life, in wrestling, in the Northwest. And this went on for a long time. Many, many years. And John Rambo felt the brunt of all of this real-life feud between the Oregon Boxing Wrestling Commission, Bruce Anderson, the Barr family, and wrestling in the Northwest. So, let's back up. John Rambo started wrestling around 1988 and came to the Northwest around 1990, so he's at the very end, the very, very end of the Don Owen territory, and he was one of those wrestlers who stuck around. Al Madrill stuck around for Sandy Barr, so did Bart Sawyer. The Bruise Brothers stuck around for a little while. You know, there was a lot of talent in the Northwest right as Don Owen closed up shop. You had Brian Adams, who was Crush of Demolition, who was the American Ninja when he first started in Portland, went to WWF as Crush of Demolition, and then disappeared in WWF and came back here to the Northwest and wrestled as Crush of Demolition in the demolition gear for Don Owen for a while until he went back to the WWF as Kona Crush. So WWF said, hey, go away for a little while. We'll reset you as a new character coming up. And he came back to the Northwest. So there was quite a bit of talent. And we'll talk about that. But again, John Rambo was here as sort of a, you know, he was a guy, middle of the card, upper card, TV champion, tag team champion, and a good guy because of the Rambo character. And then he feuded with Ed Wiskowski, Colonel De Beers, the evil South African. And so you had these two military characters who feuded. And then suddenly John Rambo, the good guy, turned heel and joined Colonel De Beers, and they were tag team champions here in the Northwest. So here's just a clip of Sandy Barr's promotion, Championship Wrestling USA, in 1992, where John Rambo takes on Bobby Blair, who came in under the tutelage of Len Denton the Grappler and was given the name in the Northwest, the Dirty White Boy. Not to be confused with Tony Anthony, the Dirty White Boy. The Grappler and Len Denton were both the Dirty White Boys in the South, and both kind of laid claim to the name. And back then, you know, you didn't know the different Dirty White Boys. You didn't know one Dirty White Boy was in one area, one was in the other. So this is Dirty White Boy Bobby Blair in the Northwest for Sandy Barr's Championship Wrestling USA, fighting John Rambo, who is a tag team partner with the evil Colonel De Beers.
Dirty White Boy had the smarts to move there, Koss.
And Dirty White Boy with an elbow drop across the chest of John Rambo. A two count, and Rambo kicks out. Well, these guys have been going tooth and nail, head to head, since the opening bell here. Here's a clothesline by Dirty White Boy.
Koss? I heard it all the way
we
up here.
You can almost feel that up here. You got to be here in person. We keep telling you, Saturday night, 8:30 bell time. The Portland Sports Arena in Portland, Oregon. Be here and see all the action. We have matches that are off TV.
Crowds are getting bigger and bigger here, Koss.
They are. And it's getting more exciting every week. Into the turnbuckle goes Rambo! And again, Rambo resorts to that mule-type martial arts kick. And it really has taken the steam out of Dirty White Boy. And put a whole bunch of hurts on his body. And he's trying to shake that. He's trying to walk it off.
Time's running out, Koss.
Time is running out. Of course, if it runs out, that's the Dirty White Boy's favor because he'll retain the title.
What's going on here, Koss?
Hold it. Colonel De Beers was coming up to the ring with a chair in his hand. And Colonel DeBeers was met by Bruiser Bryan.
Outside interference. What's the Bruiser doing? Colonel came out and defend Dirty White Boy, Cox.
Colonel DeBeers had a chair.
He was just going to sit down. He was just going to sit down.
DeBeers came out here and he picked up a metal folding chair.
Sit down, Cox, like the other guys. And Bruiser came in there for no reason. Listen to these people, Cox.
Bruiser Bryan just saved the day for Dirty White Boy. There's been a disqualification of John Rambo because of interference by DeBeers. Colonel DeBeers interfering. It was outside of your view right there on camera. But DeBeers came in from out of nowhere. He picked up a chair and he was not going to sit on it. He had other plans for that chair. And Bruiser Bryan.
Dirty White Boy really planned this one, didn't he? He had the Bruiser come down here to save himself.
Well, Bruiser Bryan intercepted Colonel DeBeers. White Boy has won by disqualification and retained the TV title championship.
Outside we'll interference, Cox. I don't believe it. See, that's what Rambo is telling him right now.
Right after this.
Well, if there's any justice in interviews, maybe Bruiser Bryan will interfere with your interview.
No justice! You know, I've really had it now, Sandy Barr. You allow those students to come down and interfere with Colonel DeBeers' discipline. Rambo and I had a war plan. Bruiser, potato farmer, you interfere. Daniel Bryan hasn't taught the American public that nothing but losers come from Idaho. This big ear body right here who thinks he's some kind of he-man. I don't know what. Who do you think you are? Do you think you're our first rodeo? Do you think you're the first big man to step in the ring with Colonel DeBeers and John Rambo? It takes more than a little beefy, beefy on your body.
Hey, listen here, Rambo. Hey.
Like Colonel DeBeers and John Rambo.
Hey, let me tell you something, Rambo. Boy.
Boy.
You and Colonel Sanders here. If he wouldn't try to interfere and hit me with a chair, thanks to this young man here who saved me tonight.
You got that right. He saved you. Everybody here knows he saved you.
He saved me.
He saved you.
He saved you from the South African Zeke back here. Colonel Sanders.
Back. My
turn. It back, boy. Shut up.
We're out of
time. Next week. I'm going to ask Sandy Barr, me and Brian, against the tag team against you two idiots. You two idiots.
All right, we'll see if that comes off. We'll have information on that in just a little bit. We'll be back with more after this.
That clip from 1992 and Sandy Barr's Championship Wrestling USA with John Rambo and his tag team partner, Colonel DeBeers, and the Dirty White Boy, Bobby Blair, and his tag team partner, a very young in the business, Bruiser Bryan Cox, who I believe was originally from Idaho and made his name here in Portland. Big guy. He was named Bruiser Bryan because Sandy Barr thought he looked like Dick the Bruiser, and he kind of did. The big barreled chest and the facial expressions. And he passed away a number of years ago, but he was a really nice guy. I got to know him a little bit, and he could have gone somewhere, but unfortunately he's no longer with us. But a really, really good guy was Bruiser Bryan Cox. So coming up, my guest, John Rambo, talking about the last days of Don Owens Portland Wrestling, and then what it was like working for Sandy Barr. And he's got some good stories about Billy Jack and about Raven, who was Scotty the Body back then, and just talking about the array of talent that Don had before they closed. And then one of the best stories probably ever on the Portland WrestleCast. And again, if this is the first time you've ever heard the Portland WrestleCast, go back, because there are a lot of good stories and a lot of history that you may not know if you're not familiar with Don Owens' territory. I'm really proud of these shows, and hopefully you'll get hooked and go back and check out some of the shows in the archives. But coming up, John Rambo on the night that Art Barr shot on him and literally broke his face in a match. And there was also a confrontation on the mic in the ring in front of fans, and a confrontation that I hadn't heard of that happened in the dressing room as well. So some pretty startling stories coming up here, the Portland WrestleCast with my guest, John Rambo. But first, as we do, as always, a word from our sponsors.
You can have it all today. TV and VCR, sofa, love seat, Oak dinette set, all for just $7.55 stereo.
Rental USA.
You don't need credit. There's no deposit. And every penny of rent goes to own it.
Rental USA.
Choose a TV and VCR, sofa, love seat, and Oak dinette set, all of this is $7.55 stereo. $15.95 a week, a rent to own.
Rentown, USA. Find us fastest in the white pages.
Remember this number, 1-800-433-FORD. It's the number to call for Vancouver Ford, Washington State's top Ford dealer in sales and customer satisfaction. Why? Vancouver Ford's lot is overstocked with cars and trucks. That means huge inventory, tremendous selection, and volume pricing. Plus, you'll find hundreds of quality used vehicles. So call 1-800-433-FORD. We'll pre-approve your credit right over the phone. It's worth the call to shop hassle-free by phone at Vancouver Ford, Vancouver, Portland's only five-star Ford dealer.
Just real quick, John, tell people how you got your start in wrestling.
Actually, I was working out at a gym in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and coincidentally, Rocky Johnson, Dwayne Johnson's father, was working out at the same gym. And it was actually the second gym that I actually ran into Rocky, and at that time, I started talking to him about pro wrestling and this and that. And he was telling me about some shows he was involved with up in the Catskills in New York, and that he needed a commercial shot for the shows that he was involved with. And I just happened to be involved with video work, and I was able to film it myself on the commercial that we shot. One thing led to another, and next thing you know, he was training me to become a pro wrestler.
Now, did the Samoans also help out? Did you get training with the Wild Samoans?
Yeah, I started with Rocky. Rocky got me going. After I was done training with Rocky, he sent me down to Memphis, where I worked the Memphis territory for Eddie Marlin, who just passed away, and Jerry Jarrett, Jeff Jarrett's father. And at that time, Jerry Lawler was the booker. And Undertaker was there as the Tower of Pain, I believe it was. That was before it was even being Mark Callis. But anyway, yeah, I went down there for a bit. When I got done with there, I was still really green, so I knew I needed more work. I came back home. And at that time, then Alpha had just opened up his school in Whitehall, PA. And I went there, and I actually became one of the first three of his students to come out of the school in Whitehall.
So what brought a Northeast guy like yourself west to Portland Wrestling?
Actually, when I started with my gimmick back in the day there, when I was younger, I had a striking resemblance to the Rambo character that Stallone was doing. And my gimmick took off. I was very fortunate. I had the look. I had the athletic ability. I knew what I was doing in the ring. I was well-trained. And the word got out. And I was working a show with, what was the big one? It was the Royal Family. Rick Morgan and Jacko Victory. I was working a show with those guys, and they were good friends with Scotty the Body, who was out in Portland at the time. And they got right on the phone with Scotty and said, "Hey, we just saw this guy Rambo. You need to get him out there," because they know I needed that kind of experience to progress in the business. Because you can only learn so much working the independent circuit. Back then, you needed them territories to, especially TV territory, to learn how to properly work. And back in that day, they didn't have none of the WWE developmental, like NXT or all that, or like the developmental leagues they had in OVW or Deep South with George down there running that stuff. So Portland was really one of the developmental territories for WWE back to WWF. But anyway, like I said, I was very fortunate, and word was getting out. And they called out Scotty, and somebody from the office there contacted me, asked me if I'd be interested to send them some promo material, which I did. the next thing you know, they were asking me to come on out there. And that was back in 1990, I believe it was.
So you're talking just the last couple of years, maybe year and a half or so, of Don Owen and about the last year and a half, 2 years of Portland TV.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, and it's another honor, and I didn't even know until I seen it on the internet, because I totally forgot about it. I was the very last match to be aired on Portland Wrestling, KPTV 12, when we were running it with Don Owens. It was Ronnie Harris and myself. We were the very final match to be aired on Portland Wrestling.
Well, let's talk
is on YouTube.
When you got there, everybody always talks about the Portland Sports Arena. What was your reaction to seeing the converted bowling alley?
Oh, well, that was the first show I worked out there. I came in there, I showed up, and they told me I'd be working Moondog at Moretti. And we went out there, had a heck of a match. But, yeah, it was a totally different atmosphere from anything that I had experienced on the East Coast. I mean, I went up and down the entire East Coast. I worked the Memphis territory with the Memphis Channel 5 studio there and that. But yeah, nothing compared with the setup in that, with the Portland Sports Arena House of Action. I had a lot of memories there.
So let's talk about who all was there. I guess it was Len Denton, the grappler, booking with Roddy Piper at the time?
Yeah, Piper was starting to fade out more because he was getting more involved with the Hollywood scene and doing more work with Vince back in New York. But yeah, Lynn was the booker. Ricky Santana was there. Al Madrill. Equalizer, who went on to be Davey Sullivan, I believe it was, in WCW. Scotty the Body. Art Barr's Beetlejuice. Scott Norton, who I got to tag with a few times. Carl Stiles was there for a bit. I know I'm forgetting some guys. Bergstrom, C.W. Bergstrom was doing more refereeing than working. Dirty White Boy. The Dirty White Boy that they had up there.
There was a lot of talent in the territory, considering that it was, you know, the end times of Don Owen's run.
Oh, yeah, Steve Dahl. How could I forget Steve Dahl? You know, he went on to be Steve Dunn. And right after I showed up, and that's when Doug Masters and Art Barr showed up. And Mike Winner, who left in and went to be part of the WCW Power Plant training program. But yeah, we had a heck of a roster.
You know, you mentioned Steve Dahl. At the time, he was sort of, you know, different style and things, but he was kind of the Ricky Morton of the territory.
Yeah, yeah, he was popular with the women. He had that long blonde hair and that thinner physique and Southern rocker, you know, that gimmick. So yeah, he was over with the female crowd. That's probably really why I kept him face more than they ever did heel.
What about you mentioned Scotty the Body, who people may know better as Raven? I've talked to him about his Portland times, and he kind of talks about. He was kind of young and brash and into the party scene, and maybe, you know, maybe he opened up his mouth a little too much for the time.
Oh, that was definitely Scotty. And in fact, there was an incident I had mentioned, Equalizer, Big Davey Sullivan at WCW. Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah, everyone remembers Evad.
Something had happened where somebody had done something. I forget what it was. And it upset me, and I just wasn't being myself. I was sitting there quiet, and Scotty said, or Equalizer said something to be funny, and Scotty the Body jumped in to basically to defend me, to stick up for me, and it was something so stupid. I can't even remember what the heck it was. Might have been like a finish of a match or something, and next thing you know, Equalizer punches him square in the face and broke his nose. And if you had, if people had the archive footage, you could go back in that time, and there was an episode back there where Scotty was working the TV with a broken nose, and they played it off that it got broken in a match, but it actually happened back in a locker room. and all because of an incident involving, you know, the three of us.
Did you live at the Bomber during your time in Portland?
No. I didn't stay at the Bomber. I stayed at the Poolside that was just down the street from there for a little bit. I figured, what the heck I did after? I finally got into an apartment. But no, I never got in that Bomber seat because there was just too much going on there for me.
Too many parties.
Yeah. If you lived there at the Bomber, you got to party big time to stay at the Bomber.
Now, you mentioned you worked Memphis. How would you compare your time in Portland versus the way they ran Memphis? How were the fans? How were the towns? Do you find any comparison between Portland and Memphis?
Well, down south, wrestling is just over so much more. You have bigger crowds down in Memphis area than you would out in Portland. That's why I was surprised a lot of times we go into these towns and the size of the crowd, it would be like depressing. You'd think that, you know, you'd have a few hundred people, especially with TV going. And, you know, some of them shows we'd be hurting. We'd be lucky if we had 100 people in the crowd. And that's back then. And like I said, when we're on television, going out to 4 million households in the Pacific Northwest. But down south, it was bigger crowds, livelier. A little different style of action. They go a little quicker. Out in Portland, it was toned down a little more than it was down in the south. But, you know, it was all good.
What about Don Owen? How was your interaction with Don?
Oh, Don was up there in age when I got there. So Don was funny. Don was Don. You know, he was a good guy. He could be forgetful at times. Like I said, he was up there in age when I was involved there. But he always treated me good, treated me fair, always talked well with me and everything. I never had an issue with Don at all.
Didn't you work a feud with Al Madrill?
Oh, God, I think I worked a feud with a bunch of the guys out there. I had a big feud going on with Bart. I had one going on with Al, for a while. Had one going on with Colonel the Bears, and we eventually became tag team partners. And I got to hold the Portland Pacific Northwest tag team title with Colonel the Bears before they ended.
You know, that was interesting because you had two sort of military-style gimmicks with the guy, the evil man from South Africa, Colonel De Beers, and then you, of course, John Rambo, the hero. But, yeah, that was kind of surprising when John Rambo turned to the dark side.
Yeah. It was fun. It was fun, though, because, you know, I was always a babyface, you know, and then getting a heel. You know, you get to work totally different. It was fun. It was different. So,
Portland was never really a big man territory, but probably when you were there was probably the biggest the roster ever was. You mentioned the Equalizer. Also, didn't Brian Adams' Crush come in at times when he was in and out of WWF?
Yeah, Brian Adams was there quite a bit. So was Billy Jack when he was still jacked up and, you know, big Billy Jack. You know, Billy was huge. Buddy Rose was also there. The lineup we had, everybody on that roster could have went to work WWE at the time.
Any Billy Jack Haynes stories?
Oh, God, yeah. I walked into the locker room one night, and Art Barr could be, back in the day, Art Barr could be a wise ass. Art Barr liked to stir shit and pull ribs and all that. That was Art. And one day we were having a conversation in the locker room, and I forget who, like I was just talking before, I was depressed on how low some of the crowds would be. And we just weren't drawing. You know, we couldn't draw big crowds. And somebody said, oh, Billy Jack, I think I did that. Somebody said, well, Billy Jack's coming in next week. They're going to put him on top. He's going to be the main event. And I said, I don't care if they bring in Hulk Hogan next week. I said, well, it's going to be hard to draw in this area. I said, these people are burned out. And next thing you know, Art went back and told Billy Jack that I said he can't draw for shit. And it was so totally out of context to what I said and how I said it. And next thing you know, I show up the next weekend to get ready to work. And this is at the Portland Sports Arena. And Billy Jack's in there, and I'm sitting down there. And he said, hey, Rambo, come here. And he calls me back in the bathroom. The bathroom was all the way in the back in a little corner, dark little corner bathroom. I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. I didn't expect that. I think that was, what the hell? I go back there. He gets right in my face. He says, what's this? You talking shit saying I can't draw for shit, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, Billy, calm down. I told him exactly what I said, you know. And then we just walked out of the bathroom. He never did nothing. I'm surprised. Because every other story I heard about Billy was punching people right in the mouth, you know, left and right, if he had the slightest issue with them. And he comes out and he's like, yeah, you don't want to do that shit with me, because I forget what he said. I said, Billy, I said, if I have an issue with you, I said, you'd be the first person. I said, I'll let you know. I said, I'm not going to talk shit about nobody behind your back. But yeah, that was my only incident I've ever had with Billy after that. In fact, I worked him. I think I worked him that night then. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, he's going to stiff me out there in the ring. And he actually worked me light as heck. We had a hell of a match. For the finish, I went for my big kick that I would always do. And he was healing. He ducked the kick, gave me the big forearm uppercut in the groin. And 1, 2, 3. And that was it. But, yeah, no, he treated me well off the ring. Didn't take nothing out of me. And I was surprised. But, yeah, no, I know stories where I don't know what the reason was, but outside somewhere, I forgot what bar they were at, he punched Mark Sawyer right in the face and busted his nose. And then his face was a mess for a month. But yeah, God, Billy Jack, he's a character.
What about Bart Sawyer? Did you have much interaction with Bart? He was. I knew Bart fairly well when I lived in Portland. A different dude, but a pretty nice guy, I felt.
Oh, Bart was like my best friend out in Portland for the whole 6-7 years I was out there. In fact, I lived with Bart for a while after I had I had to get out of an apartment or something. I had nowhere to go, and he let me move in where he was at. You know, Bart and I were like I said, best friends. And in fact, when I left Portland and came back east here and started running the stuff that I'm doing back here, I brought Bart in a few times to work some shows. In fact, he held my league's cruiserweight and heavyweight championship belts. But yeah, I was very tight with Bart. And it's so sad what became of Bart now. He's, you know, luckily he's still with us, but he's in such bad shape. He had a few bad strokes, and he's just in very bad shape.
Yeah, it's really sad. Really nice guy, though. But yeah, I agree with you. It's sad what happened to him.
Yeah,
When it came to Portland, you mentioned that the crowds were not great, and your feeling was just that the audience was burned out.
Yeah, it was. And it was at that time where Vince had just smartened up the world into, you know, sports entertainment and that. And, just going to, I don't know what it was. It was just dying. It just died. You know, the crowds just weren't there like they should have been. And, you know, I give it to Sandy and Don and Barry. We'd go out on these long road shows and that. And you wouldn't have to be a mathematician or, you know, with a college degree to look out at the crowd and count the number of people out there and how much ticket prices were and compare that to the total expenses with paying all the wrestlers, the transporting, the ring, the rent, the insurance, and all that stuff, the advertising. And they're taking a big hit every show. And, you know, you're going to these shows wondering how much longer it's going to last. And you see how long it lasted. You know, they pulled the plug on it there, and boom, that was it. Yeah, if you had any kind of brain in the business, you know, and you were out there, you know, it was depressing because you know it was going to happen. And it happened.
When I talked to Raven about business at that time, he said that things were fairly steady. He said that when he did a couple of matches with Sandy Barr, that popped a little bit. But by and large, things were steady. Do you recall anything that worked or drew any extra people?
No, not really. It was like you said, it was steady. we were working 4, 5, 6 nights out of the week, but you know, a lot of us still had to go out and get real jobs if we had any family or anything, and because the wrestling alone wasn't covering the bills, and that's not, you know, pro wrestling supposed to be about.
A lot of people were surprised from the fans' perspective when Don Owen announced that they were leaving television. And then a few months later in 92, he just announced to the crowd that he was done. In either case, did you have any indication that the end of TV or the end of Don's promotion was coming to an end?
No, I don't even remember how they broke that to us or not. I don't remember if they gave us a heads up or if it just happened quick. My God, that's so long ago. I honestly don't even remember.
What about the commission? Did you have any issues dealing with the commission?
Oh, God, Bruce Anderson. Yeah, Bruce Anderson and I, we didn't like each other, plain and simple. And it was funny because he's from New York and I'm from Pennsylvania, and we still didn't like each other. You know, we just butted heads. Our personalities didn't, you know, it started with me coming from back east and had my first physical or whatever. I got everything done back here, and he didn't like something the way the doctors did something or whatever, and wanted me to go through getting it done again out there. And I told him I wasn't paying all that money for that. But you know, yeah, I tolerated Bruce. He tolerated me, but I wasn't like some of these guys that were going and sitting down and having breakfast or lunch with them, you know, once a week or whatever. That was far from me and Bruce. Yeah, I never had that type of relationship with him.
Weren't there a lot of accusations in the locker room about who was the stooge and who was stooging off Bruce Anderson?
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny you bring that up, because I was just going through a lot of memorabilia I have over my school. And I forget who the guy's name was. Phil Brown, does that ring a bell? I think it was somebody that did internet work back in the day, what you call a smart mark back then. And he had written something up that was out there in one of the sheets or whatever. And it was involving that incident I had with Art Barr. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, we remember can. Why don't you tell this story and then we'll talk about that match.
What was the story I was telling?
Something about a dirt sheet.
Oh, yeah, no, his dirt sheet was about that match. He said that I got hurt really bad, that they shot on me because I was being a stooge for the commission. So they took it out on me at that event. And he was like trying to stick up for me for that, what they did was wrong, but what they did to me was because I was stooging and that I was set to testify for on behalf of the commission with the stuff that Sammy Barr was doing. Now, to show you how ridiculous all this nonsense was, and like I said, we'll go through that story. If I was going to testify on what Sammy was doing before they shattered my face, why didn't I testify about what they were doing after Sammy shattered my face? You know what I mean? If they shattered my face, I'd have more reason to go out and tell Bruce everything. But like I said, I didn't get along with Bruce. I had nothing to tell Bruce. I said I wasn't the guy going and having lunch with Bruce every Friday, you know, down in Canby, Oregon. That wasn't me. You know, that was the dude running the Canby Inn, not me. And but anyway, what happened, the whole thing that happened was that the commission was all over Sammy because he was running those shows at the Interstate Pavilion. And he was paying all the wrestlers, and he was charging admission, and he was saying that he wasn't, that the admission was really for paying to park their vehicles at the Interstate Pavilion. And technically, he was absolutely right. But again, I wasn't involved with it. That wasn't my situation. I didn't give a shit what he was doing. I wanted to wrestle. I'd show up. I'd have my match. He'd pay me. I'd go home. So I had no reason to go stoop at the admission. But anyway, I find out that now that the hearing's coming up and the heat's starting to come down on the guy that was having lunch with Bruce Anderson every week. So Billy Two Eagles, who was friends with this guy, goes and tells Sandy, hey, the stooge going to the commission is Rambo, to take the heat off of the other guy. And So I guess Sandy calls Art Barr because he was working American Love Machine down in Mexico. And he calls Art and tells him to come on up and tells them that I'm going to be the stooge for the commission at their big hearing that they had set. And again, I didn't even know what the hearing was. I wasn't involved in it, had nothing to do with it, I didn't care about it. So I wasn't even expecting nothing. I show up to work this night at the Interstate Pavilion. They tell me that I'm going to work Art Barr American Love Machine. So fine, no problem. We go out there to have our match. Like the first minute or so, and I think the match might be out there some places on the internet, I'm not sure. The first minute or so, he punches me right in the mouth and drives my tooth through my lip. And my lip is bleeding bad. And I just shook it off, blood going everywhere. So, okay. And so I just waited because I was working heel at the time. I waited for when it was my turn to start to get my heat, which I did. And I just started to lay in Art. And what we call a receipt, you know, payback for what he did to my lip. And, I mean, I tore into him pretty good because back, I don't know if you remember my style. I did a lot of martial arts. And a lot of that stuff, if I wanted to, I could lay it in and I could lay it in good to where I wouldn't hurt you, but, you know, it'd be tight. You'd feel it. And so I worked Art, Art real tight during my heat. So I'm like, okay, you know, he learned his lesson on that. So trying to take it home. He shoots me off the rope and gives me a flying clothesline right to the face. And I thought he was going to hit me with a clothesline in the chest. So, you know, I had no expectations of nothing. And he hits me square in the face so hard. I mean, I didn't even see black. I saw bright red. I'm laying on the mat. I'm still seeing red. My nose is on the side of my face. And Art comes walking over. And now my vision is starting to come back to me. And he goes to grab my head to pick me up and lets me go because he thinks I'm hurt. I'm not going to get up. He thinks that's it. And I was so pissed off because, like I said, I didn't know what's going on. I thought now he's just being a prick with me because I worked him stiff during the heat. So he's going to retaliate now and do that to me for stiffing him during the heat after he busted my mouth open. That's why I thought that's where we're at now in the match. And I'm so mad, I still got up. And I proceeded. If you've watched the video, you can see I tore into him. I laid into him. I kicked him. So I went to grab. I had him in the corner, and I grabbed his hair because he was turned with his back turned so he wouldn't turn around because I was just trying to punch him and form him and everything. I grabbed his hair so hard and twisted him with my hand, my left hand. I dislocated a finger turning him like that, and I went to kick him in the face for what he did to my face. And right at the fraction of a second, he turned and pulled up on his chin, and I kicked him so hard in the throat, I messed his throat up because I found out afterwards that they took him to the hospital. And after the hospital, he quickly flew back down to Mexico. But me now, I got my nose all the way on the side of my face. After all this nonsense happens, they get Art out of the ring. Or after I kicked him in the ass, I said, go ahead, take it home now, because he was supposed to roll me up and pin me, which we did. And then again, if you got the video, you can check it out. He rolls me up and he tries puts me in a cradle. And he goes, 1, 2, 3. And after the three, he tries to hold me in that cradle. And I guess he figured I wasn't going to be done with him. And you can see I just power out of that cradle, just bust out of there. And he gets out, rolls out of the ring real quick. And they take him back into the back. Sandy jumps in the ring and gets on the microphone. And what we got here, folks, is we got the stooge right here that's going to go to the commission, blah, blah, blah. Right on the microphone, all the fans. Now, these fans are disgusted because they don't know what's going on. You know, they don't know nothing about this commissioner hearing nonsense. And I took the microphone from Sandy and like I said, I had no idea. That's when I found out what was going on. And I just told Sandy, I said, you know, I've been out here for all these years from the East Coast. I got no family out here or nothing. I said, there were times I looked up to you like you were my father. Because Sandy would take good care of me. You know, if I needed something, this or that, you know, Sandy would help me out. And I said, I can't believe you did something like this to me, Sandy, without even coming to me first and talking to me. That you just assume something like that. You send Art out here. You do this to my face. And I got blood spraying everywhere. I said, nose on the side of my face. I was so disgusted, mad. I threw the microphone down. The fans know that it was total nonsense. And after what they see with me and Sandy in the ring, now they're all disgusted with what's going on. And I start going in the back. You got to go up these steps and go back to the locker room. I'm starting to walk up the steps. Here comes Art running down the steps with 10-pound Olympic weight. screaming like a banshee, like he's going to come after me with these weights. And I stopped halfway up there again with my nose on the side of my face, and I pulled my arm back. And I said, "No, you come down here." I said, "I'm going to kill you." And at that time, then Billy Two Eagles, who initiated all this bullshit, comes in quick and grabs Art and pulls him back up the steps. And Art saying, "Don't you come up here. Don't you come up here." I'm like, "Bullshit." I said, "All my stuff is up there." I said, "I'm getting paid." And again, my nose is on the side of my face. I go up there. I'm walking back to the dressing room. All of a sudden, again, I hear the scream, and I turn around. Here comes Art running at me. And he comes running, and everybody's up there watching, even his father. His father's there. Sean Barr, the referee, is there. Jesse Barr, Jimmy Jack Funk is there. And Art's running at me. I got the four bars right there. I'm like, "Oh, man, now what's going to happen to me?" Art comes flying at me, jumps up in the air. I take a quick step to my right or left, whatever, and I don't know how, but I was able to underhook him and get his head in a front face lock. And I was bigger than Art and stronger. So I was able to hold him there with just the one arm, and I pulled my other arm back. And Sandy was like within 4 or 5 feet of me. I said, "Sandy, please get your son away from me." I said, "Something bad's going to happen." So, you know, they did. They pulled Art away, and that's when I guess I took him to the hospital. I went back in my little square area where I was changing. This was at like 9 o'clock at night. I waited back there from 9 o'clock till 10 o'clock when everything was done to collect my pay. Sandy apologizing and that. I just said, just give me my money. And I got paid, jumped in my car, drove from Portland Sports Arena up there in Portland all the way down I-5, that 8-lane highway. 4 lanes each side then, and probably sticking now. But anyway, down to Canby, Oregon, where I was living, too. And I got back there. Again, never called the commission, never did nothing, never reported it. And that was the whole incident in that evening. And then the commission did find out about it, and they went after Sandy to make him pay all the medical expenses that I had to go through, which ended up being like $25,000 in reconstructive surgery because my face was shattered in 8 places from the clothesline. Crazy story.
I have heard the story, but never in that amount of detail. Were you and Sandy and the Barr family ever able to patch things up?
I ended up going back and working for Sandy in 95, 96. I was his TV champion before I left the Pacific Northwest to head back here to Maryland, where I'm at right now. But yeah, I went back and I swear to God, Sandy would always say, he said, "You know, John," he said, "that match between you and Bart," he said, "I swear to God," he said, "that was one of the best pro wrestling matches I've ever seen in my life." I'm like, "Well, Sandy, that's because half of it was real." It should be good. But yeah, no, I always got along well with Jesse Barr. I worked as a bit of a program with Jesse when he was face and I was heel, and we were running the Uncle Milt's Pizza up there in Vancouver when Sandy took over after Don shut down his stuff. But I was always really tight with Jesse. In fact, when my nose was on the side of my face that night, Jesse came and actually tried to straighten it out for me. And Jesse felt so bad with what happened because Jesse knew I would never do nothing like that. And I don't think Jesse even knew what was up. I don't think they told him. It was just something that Sandy and Art kept to themselves. And yeah, when I came up, you could see the look in Jesse's face, like he was so beside himself because Jesse and I were tight. I used to go up to the sports pavilion during the week or whatever, and Jesse always liked the martial arts stuff that I did. So I would teach him that stuff. He would show me like flips from a going out of a backdrop into a flip and this and that, things that I didn't know. You know, we would swap experience. But yeah, Jesse and I were tight, and that was the crazy thing about it. I know if they would have talked to Jesse before all that, it would have never happened. But it did happen.
What about, right, obviously you had to heal, but did you just quit wrestling even after your face finally healed up?
No. I forget what happened. And that happened in 93 or 94. And I think I waited like 6 months. if even that long ahead. As soon as my face healed, I was back. I was back at working.
Working
no,
for
actually,
Sam.
No, that's right. I that's right. It was about 6 months afterwards that I waited. Yeah, Bart Sawyer started. Like I told you, Bart was like my best friend. Bart was starting to do a lot of booking work for Sandy and doing a lot of his videography stuff. And so Bart was really tight with Sandy. And, yeah, it was Bart who went to Sandy and said, hey, you know, Rambo's all better now and this and that. You want to bring him back? And one thing led to another, and I was back to.
At what point do you think Sandy realized his mistake?
Oh, right then and there that night when I got on the microphone and he seen how upset I was, how pissed off I was, and what I told him. When it happened, he knew he made a mistake.
What about Art? Did you ever talk to Art afterwards?
No. Art flew down to Mexico after he got out of the hospital, and then it wasn't long after that he had passed away. Yeah, so, I never got to see Art again after that.
As you look back on your time in Portland, what do you think you got out of the experience?
Oh, God, learning the most important thing was all the politics and that involved behind the actual, you know, match that you go out there. That's everything that's involved to be a part of, you know, what's going on. It's very hard to be like a loner. And unless you've got some, like, very, very extremely rare gifted talent, you're not going to really go nowhere getting good angles or pushes if you're not in tight with the guys and hanging out with them and, you know, this and that. And just everything that's involved with it. Back then you had to maintain a decent size if you wanted to go anywhere. And you know, people ain't stupid. You know, you got to do things to keep that size and that muscularity. And, you know, I got to the point where I got hair falling out, you know, all over my bathroom walls when I'm drying my hair. And I'm thinking, what do I need more? You know, my hair or huge, gigantic muscles? You know, I lose my hair, then my whole gimmick shot. So, you know, there was just so much that, like I said, that this Portland back then was like a developmental territory. It was the only place you went from Portland up, and that was either WCW or WWF back then. Because, like I said, that was considered a developmental territory then. And with what was going on, with how you had to conduct yourself and everything, you go to WWF, I was just older when I got there. I got into the business at an older age, and I didn't have that same kind of hunger and ambition that the younger guys did that grew up their whole life wanting to be a pro wrestler. You know, that wasn't me. I just fluked. I was always into football, you know, martial arts, always something athletic. And one thing led to another when I ran into Rocky, and that's how I got into pro wrestling. It wasn't a lifelong dream of mine to become a professional wrestler. You know, it just happened, and I made the best out of what could happen. And when I did leave Portland, I came back here. In 1997 alone, I had 5 offers if I wanted to go to ECW, and that was when ECW was pretty hot still back then. And I turned them all down because of school I was running. And on a couple occasions, I could have went and done some work with WWE if I wanted to do that. And like I said, I was content with doing the school and running the school and training these new guys that were getting into it. It was something I was enjoying a lot more than dealing with all the politics and that. And yeah, that was all stuff that I learned from being in Portland, that stuff you can't learn if you're working once a week or whatever, every 2 weeks on the independent circuit. You had to work a steady territory back then to really understand how this business works. That's why now the territory's gone. They got NXT. That's your territory. You know, they get the people that they see are talented on the independent circuit, which is so few of the slim and few now today. It's like they go after more personalities, celebrities, bigger athletes from various sports and that, and bring them in and train them down at NXT more so than they do with independent wrestlers. And it's, business is just so different now. But yeah, back then, working in Portland opened my eyes to how the whole business worked outside of the wrestling ring. And that was very important, you know, for me, especially at my age.
So tell me about the school. Let everybody know about your school.
I was 25, 26 years. And we were located here in Hagerstown, Maryland. But just recently, in this past June, we moved location just 20 miles up the highway to Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. Nice and newer area, cleaner building. But yeah, that's where we're at now. But yeah, that's what I've been doing since 1997 is training the talent and getting them ready for what you do out there. One of my bigger names that we got out there who spent a couple years here would be Luke Gallows. And then after that, I got a handful of guys that make appearances every now and then on SmackDown and Live. Brandon Scott. He gets a lot of work on Raw, SmackDown, Napalm Bomb. He gets a lot of work on there as well. We get a lot of guys that get to do the character skit parts as well. But, yeah, it still goes well. We got a lot of people that, you know, got on and do a lot of good things.
So how can people reach out to you and get more information about your school?
We got a Facebook page. Just go on Facebook, check out the Superior Pro Wrestling Training Center, House of Pain. Real easy, H-O-P-W-F, any of them. Just pop it in there in the search and you'll see it right away. Yeah, still going very well. In 2010, I had the honor of being inducted into the New England Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, which is a pretty big deal now back here on the East Coast. I don't know if they get that out west yet. But yeah, I got in with a very good class. So yeah, things have gone well for me. I can't complain.
And your face is okay.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Face is fine. Yeah. My nose is shot. Since that incident, I've never been able to breathe in and out my nose anymore. So yeah, that's something that I'll live until forever.
Well, John Rambo, Superior Pro Wrestling Training Center, also known as the House of Pain. You can find it on Facebook. Thanks for your time. If you ever want to come back and talk about more Portland wrestling stories, let me know. I'd love to talk with you some more.
Excellent. Very good. Nice talking to you, Jim.
So long, everybody. From the Portland Sports Arena, this has been Portland Wrestling.